More of Lake Effect Now. I'm Mitch Teich.
And I'm Bonnie North. For a half century, the Milwaukee restaurant The Safe House has served a helping of Cold War history alongside its burgers, fries, and drinks. The restaurant was founded by Dave Baldwin, a connoisseur of the Cold War and of espionage. The ownership changed hands more recently, but the walls of The Safe House are still adorned with memorabilia from the Cold War era.
And while its day-to-day missions are food and entertainment, the restaurant not long ago hosted two people with strong connections to the Cold War. I had the chance to sit down with them and talk about how their firsthand relationship with that time shapes their lives today.
I'm Warden Joesco, and basically I'm a former G2 United States Army intelligence operative, and my activity with the intelligence service is going back to the 1949, pretty early.
Well, my name is Francis Gary Powers Jr. I am the founder and chairman emeritus for the Cold War Museum, and my interest in the Cold War stems from my family heritage. Dad was the U-2 pilot shot down over the former Soviet Union on May 1st of 1960. That ended up in the history books as the U-2 incident. And I am now helping to honor Cold War veterans, preserve Cold War history, and educate future generations about this time period, because the Cold War is over and kids today don't know anything about it.
The question I have that I think both of you can reflect on, Werner, you spent time in an East German prison in the course of what you were doing in the intelligence world. How much of your life today do you still reflect on the time, however many years ago that was, more than a half century ago?
Well, actually, after 6 years in captivity, it's a mark. It's a scar. Actually, you have scars on your skin. But if there is something like a scar on your soul, in your soul, medically, if there is such a thing, I don't know. But I would say I never seen a scar on a soul. But if there is such a thing, I think I still have it after so many years, because that is something it will never, never disappear.
And for me, freedom is precious. It's something that many people take for granted. They don't understand what it's like to be free because they are free and they've never been in captivity. They've never had their freedom taken away from them. And so for Werner, having been in prison for 6 years, in a Stasi prison of all prisons, and my father to be incarcerated in a Soviet prison for almost 2 years, they have a much deeper appreciation of what it is to be free, as opposed to confined and limited.
We're sitting here, we're actually in the newsroom pub, but we're right next to the Safe House, and the Safe House is this restaurant that has all this Cold War memorabilia, and it's you know, one part museum, one part restaurant, and kind of one part curiosity, maybe is the way to put it. How do you view people's interest in that period? There are people that, many people that go to this restaurant, they probably go to the Cold War Museum, who have very little memory of that period. Do you think we treat that era with enough respect?
Definitely no. There's one thing leaking. And that is, of all the wars the United States ever had, the most important war is not even mentioned. This country can never ever been militarily occupied. Let's go back to World War II. The Germans and the Japanese, they could have never occupied this country militarily. It's impossible. But ideologically, that is where you can occupy this country. And then, let me put it this way. In other words, would we have lost the Cold War? Look at the flag over there in the corner, and look at the 50 stars. Now, would we have lost the Cold War? That flag would look totally different. you would not see the 50 little stars in there. What you would see in there would be 50 little hammer and sickles. Because militarily, you cannot occupy this country. And only, it's like a herd of sheep. Namely, the 95% of the people don't count at all. It's the 5% of the people and less who are able, capable to hijack the power and enforce their policy. And that's it. So therefore, the Cold War is the most important victory this country ever had. And it's not being taught, and we don't teach it in social science. There are no Cold War history teachers. We still talk about storming Iwo Jima and all the things. All battles won. Thankfully, they were born, and no D-Day and whatever. But just think about it, if we would have lost the Cold War.
And I agree with Werner, for the most part, about Cold War history not being taught. But on my lectures around the country, I'm seeing a trending change, in that more universities are offering Cold War courses. More high schools are starting to teach Cold War more than just the last week of the semester. And that they're starting to interpret the Cold War based on the War on Terror, and how the Cold War transformed and transitioned from the Cold War between the Soviets and the Americans to an ambiguous war between enemies that don't have a quote-unquote country that they call home.
How do you feel when you see something like a prison door from a Stasi prison in a restaurant, and you see artifacts? You know, they're kind of kitschy artifacts, but these are real parts of that scar on your soul, if you will.
Well, this safe house has actually two dishes on its menu. And one is the culinary dish which you eat, and then they also serve history.
And for me, this is normal. I mean, my house has Cold War artifacts in it and has pictures on the walls. So this is my life. I live this, it's normal, I understand it, I see it, I know what it is. But for people who don't have a Cold War background or who are not knowledgeable of Cold War history, they come in and oftentimes they just are unaware of what's on the walls around them, how important the artifacts in the safe house are to preserving this Cold War history. There are pieces of the Berlin Wall. There's this Stasi prison door, an authentic Stasi prison door in Milwaukee.
and you're okay with French fries being served next to it.
Right. Oh, yes, most definitely. Because it's also the theme here. Espionage, James Bond, intrigue, KGB, CIA, the man from UNCLE. All of these themes throughout this restaurant keep that history alive. Now, some of it's Hollywood, but some of it is authentic, down-to-earth, real-life artifacts. And people who come in and see the signatures on the walls or the artifacts on the walls and take the time to show their children about it, they're doing them a service.
Well, and it's not only in the United States. Let me just tell you an actual fact from my friends, which I just heard from Berlin. A graduating class in the West German town of Cologne is being rewarded for the excellency in performing and getting the degree with a trip to Berlin. And there they are, the geniuses of the graduating class, visiting the Brandenburg Gate. And there is one question asked by one of the graduates. And very humbly she asked that question, but there's one thing I don't quite understand. How could they build the Brandenburg Gate so close to the wall?
Mm-hmm.
Self-explanatory. Mm. Well,
but then again, I think I have to explain a little bit, because the listening audience may not understand the connotation here. The Brandenburg Gate is 150 years old or something
wow,
to that effect.
And it was done with the 18... Napoleon took the horses off 1870s or 17-something.
And I imagine there are a lot of people who think that the Berlin Wall was there 150 years ago.
So there we have, right? So basically, it's not only going to, for our students, even the people. We were far away, removed from the Cold War, but the actual people over there can, so, I mean, I'm speechless.
Well, okay, so let me ask you a question, and I apologize for opening this can of worms, but given the place of you and your family in history, when you watch today the news that what is no longer the Soviet but is now the Russian government has attempted to have its influence on American politics, what goes through your mind?
It's very simple. Let me tell you that, very well explanatory. The Cold War started 1945, immediately after the end of World War II, and it ended in 1991. End of the subject matter. The Cold War won, ended. And all what you have today, I don't know how you're gonna label it, what it is. Maybe you can call it, if you want to and wish, you can call it the Cold War II. It's okay with me, but do not call it the continuation of the Cold War. It's a new war. Now, and if you make, specifically, if you are asking me, what is the today's situation in the world? There is only one answer, which I have now as a military historian, not earning my degree on a university of advanced sciences, but you know, I learned history exactly there where the real leaders learned it, where Lenin learned it, where Stalin learned it, where Mao Zedong learned it, where the most of the Pandit Nehru learned it. They all learned military history in prison. And my answer for the problems of today, name whatever situation exists in the world. For me, it is nothing else but whatever we have in today's world is a failed U.S. foreign policy. End of the story.
Now, my take on the Russians currently, over the last year, trying to influence our presidential election is it's nothing new. On either side, back in 1960, Khrushchev is quoted as saying that he intentionally delayed the release of my father in order to prevent Nixon from winning and giving the election to Kennedy. In fact, Nixon blamed in part the U-2 incident to his defeat against Kennedy. So you jump up to today, and I look at all these newspaper articles that are going, and all the people that are so upset and crying foul that the Russians tried to influence our American election. And I laugh. Americans, the American government, has been influencing elections around the world from beginning of the Cold War. But now that it's happening to us, oh no, foul, you can't do that, that's not right. Not realizing that we've been doing it all along. And I'm not saying that America's bad for doing that. We were trying to exert our foreign policies in other countries and making sure that communism didn't spread. They justified it that way. But now that it's happening to us, it's a taste of our own medicine.
This goes back to what you were saying about the occupation is an idea and not a physical thing.
The question of meddling would be, which I have not answered, but you can answer me exactly, who was meddling in Persia? You know what Persia is? Persia, ask the students and they wouldn't even know what Persia is, right? But ask them about Iran. Because that is somebody did some meddling, right? In a democratic elected Persia, wasn't that name Mossadegh? Whatever happened to that guy? Where did the Shah came from? I mean, that was some meddling. Maybe wasn't that meddling?
This really does seem to go back to what you were saying, the idea that, that the Soviet Union could never occupy physically the United States, but maybe this is a realization that, that what it really is all about is trying to occupy the thoughts and the spirit.
It's even so, and you know, and most people, and that is how little the public is aware of the Cold War. You know, today, just do it yourself. I mean, just go on any interstate, right? And you know, and ask anybody why do we have an interstate? And they say, oh yeah, so we can go and see our grandparents faster in a certain time and in a faster way and things like that. And nobody really realizes that the biggest Cold War spending ever implemented in the United States is the interstate system, because Eisenhower, he knew how to win the war. He won the war. Once he entered the Autobahn, he knew that Mr. Adolf was done. It's a defense project. From time to time, no matter what it is, there's one stretch of a pretty long straight highway, interstate. What do you think what it is? These are the landing strip for future aircraft, which are only indicated on military maps.
Just in case there was ever a need and there was an invasion on American soil, the interstate system could then be turned into a air base to help fight off the enemy.
Right, and this is what's interesting about this. This is probably the most visible and yet least known legacy of the Cold War.
Very well said. The least known.
Let me thank both of you, Werner and Gary. Thanks so much, and best of luck to both of you in your work.
All right. Mitch, thank you very much.
Very welcome.
Werner Jurecko is 85 years old. He was born in the disputed Upper Silesia region of Europe. He was recruited as an undercover political operative for the U.S. Army's G2 intelligence service, during which time he was captured by the East German Stasi and imprisoned for 6 years. Today he lives in Illinois.
Francis Gary Powers Jr. is the son of Francis Gary Powers, the American U-2 pilot who was shot down over the Soviet Union in 1960. He's the founder and chairman emeritus of the Cold War Museum in Warrenton, Virginia. We spoke with Jurecko and Powers at the Safe House Restaurant in Milwaukee, and you can read more about both of them at WUWM.com.